True Seekers, how you doing? Mike Malloy here on the NoFM Radio Network. Thanks for joining us for a while tonight. We're going to have some moron sounds for you tonight, and also some comments from Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke. It's an old trick, but it really worked today. It really worked. Just as Ben Bernanke started his testimony in front of, was it the House or the Senate? It was the Senate.
The Senate Banking Committee.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't watch this crap. Kathy does. But because I've heard it all before, I've heard it my entire life, and it's all nonsense, especially when it comes from Republican appointees or members of the Banking Committee, Democrat and Republican. Every single one of them is, one presumes, on the take. But anyway, I digress. Justice Ben Bernanke, the Fed chairman, started his story before the Senate Banking Committee, and the cable network, the cable networks, MSNBC, CNN, Fox, were all breathlessly covering every single word. Bush and his handlers decided that was a perfect time to hold a toy press conference, which they then did, which had the net effect of immediately pulling all the cameras, all the networks away from what Bernanke had to say, and onto the nonsense dribbling out of Chucklenuts' mouth. It's an old trick, but it always works. And as long as we have a media in this country, a television medium especially, that's comprised of whores, thugs, and asses, no offense to sex worker or four-legged animals, as long as we have that sort of television medium in this country, the trick will always work. The real news, if there was any, was in the testimony of Ben Bernanke. So we shall bring some of that to you tonight, because unless you are a C-SPAN addict, you missed it. I meant to bring this up Monday, because when Jesse Helms died while we were off in the mountains, and interestingly, we were in the mountains in North Carolina, when we found out that he had croaked after living a long and racist kind of miserable life, I just filed it away. Okay, so he's dead. So what? He's an old man. You know, people get old, people die. But then it occurred to me I wonder. I meant to bring this up Monday. Maybe you have some thoughts on it. Is Jesse Helms in the Christian hell? Is he in hell even as we speak? We talk a lot about souls condemned to hell, and of course I don't believe any of that nonsense, but there is always the slight possibility that if you construct something in such a manner as you genuinely believe in it, maybe such a thing does exist for some of these fundamentalist Christians. But I just wonder if Jesse Helms is roasting in hell tonight, along with a whole collection of other politicians and noted Americans who devoted their entire lives to causing misery, pain, upset, and denial of equality to so many people. I mean, what a way to dedicate your life. Jesse Helms was the Muammar Gaddafi of the tobacco industry. There was not a cigarette company that he didn't revere. Jesse Helms single-handedly probably brought more death to more people around the globe than Adolf Hitler, than Mao, than Stalin, than all of these people combined, because of his unerring servitude to the tobacco companies, the largest exporters of death. They even exceed the weapons industry in this country. But there is Jesse Helms, the leading light of the tobacco industry, who is responsible for a mountain of dead souls, who is responsible for so many children growing up without parents, who's responsible for more suffering than the entire Nazi high command. There he is, Jesse Helms, who spent his spare time demonizing people because they were of a different color from his. So I just wonder if Jesse Helms is in hell. My answer is, I certainly hope so. Well, I'm glad I got that off my chest. No, you disagree? Anybody out there disagree? Jesse Helms is responsible for more death. Hitler was responsible for approximately 50 million when you total up all the dead of World War II. Stalin, maybe another 30 million during the purges and the starvation. Mao, maybe another 25 or 30 million. Where are we now? 110 million. Throw in Pol Pot, a couple million more. Who do you want to add? Who do you want to add? Jesse Helms is directly responsible for probably, I don't know what the global total would be. In this country, it runs about 500,000 deaths a year from the use of tobacco. So if you extrapolate globally, what, 6, 7, 8 million? 7 million, 6 dead a year. Multiply it by 40. What do you have? 250 million people dead as a result of Jesse Helms' work in the vineyards of the tobacco industry? You get my point? The Prairie 2 sent me an email today referencing the this flood of financial spokes geeks for the Bush crime family, just trying their damn... Man, they're all going nuts, aren't they? This one goes before the Senate. This one goes before the House. This one appears on all the talk shows. Everybody trying to reassure everybody else. No, 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 no. It's not melting down. It isn't. Quick, quick. Click your heels 3 times and say, there's no place like home. There's no place like home. There's no place like home. None of this is happening. It's not real. Pay no attention to the stock market. Pay no attention to anything. We're not even in a recession. It's just a slowdown. Prairie 2 writes, Mike, the FDIC spokesman was making the rounds of the morning infotainment shows today. They're now hinting that as many as 200 banks could fail. The FDIC says this was no big deal and compared this to the SNL collapse of the Reagan era. The spokesperson didn't mention that cost us close to $1 trillion, not including the losses by stockholders and uninsured deposits. The bailout money went to the banks who took over the assets of the SNLs. Nor did the spokesperson mention that over the last 20 years, the FDIC has allowed banks to merge again into huge regional banks. They become bloated behemoths that were already one good sneeze away from all the cards falling down even before this crisis started. Then the networks brought out the financial advisors who are all working on the same talking point. They're harping on the notion that people shouldn't tap into their 401ks to pay their bills. Can you say stock market collapse? These are the same people who told you that it was crazy to sell Bear Stearns at $57 the day before it was seized. Unless you can shift your 401k into government bonds, you can kiss it goodbye. Even if the stocks you are invested in don't go to zero, that doesn't mean the investment fund that owns them for you won't. Anytime there's a major downturn, these funds drop like bugs in a Raid commercial. Getting out of your 401k is expensive. If your employer will even let you. If you do get out, the worst that will happen is that you won't make as much money if an economic miracle happens. If you are working on that assumption, that the markets will rebound, you should shift your 401k investments into stock funds that specialize in unicorn ranching and rainbow pot of gold harvesting. Prairie 2, who usually has something pithy to say in his email. Pithy, T-H, pithy. So why don't we We're back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Replace him with Rush Limbaugh to the planet Mars. I'm sure he could find some conservative, no thinking, only my way, one side life forms among the stars. Then our Earth would be without those right-wing czars. Let's send them both off to Mars. Let's send Jesse to the planet of the red. It will match his neck that holds up his tired old head. With him up there, it won't seem that far. So let's send Jesse home to Mars. Well, now let's send them both off to Mars. Strong, strong, firm, wake up. Strong.
Reality Radio for a Rational World. The Mike Malloy Show, only on Nova M Radio.
I love that. Reality Radio for a Rational World. In what dimension is all of this occurring? Max Blumenthal writing at Huffington Post today. This is not news. Anyone who has followed the career of Phil Gramm knows this to be fact, and it's old stuff. It's from the last century, matter of fact, in the mid-90s, I believe, but it bears repeating, especially given the fact of Phil Gramm's recent invocation of what he refers to as a nation of whiners. All of us complaining about a mental recession, and so on, and so on, and so on. You know, McCain has surrounded himself with a crew that makes the Bush crime family look... Well, they are professional. It's just that their profession is murder and mayhem. But the Bush crime family, it looks like a well-oiled crime machine, whereas the McCain operation is, I don't know, I haven't come up with a term yet. But Phil Gramm, he, back in the mid-90s, 1996, as a matter of fact, he thought about and attempted to invest $15,000 in a porn film called Truck Stop Women. The money ultimately helped produce a film portraying Richard Nixon wandering nude around the White House, but that's a whole different story. As Blumenthal points out, Gramm was an accident waiting to happen. Indeed. His most recent gaffe represents little more than a scrap in the massive heap of wreckage he has left in his wake. Gramm's own presidential campaign, yes, he did, back in 1996, was among his most high-profile casualties. In order to win a whopping total of 8 delegates, Gramm had to spend $20 million, or about $2.5 million. Per delegate. Now, this experience curiously translated into a job as one of John McCain's key political advisors. Why, of course. Anyway, Gramm first, before he ran for president, he returned to the Senate, where he was lobbied intensely by one of the major campaign contributors, one of his major campaign contributors, Enron. And Enron, of course, enjoyed easy access to Gramm's office. The senator's wife, Phil Gramm's wife, served on Enron's board of directors, and Ken Lay was his 1992 campaign co-chair. Now, how did Gramm reward these angels? Well, in 2000, he slipped, Gramm did, something called the Commodity Futures Modernization Act into an omnibus spending bill. Omnibus spending bill, just as Congress headed off for summer vacation. That amendment instantly enabled the creation of a shadow banking system, in the words of Warren Buffett, weapons of financial destruction, that directly contributed to the current mortgage foreclosure crisis. Millions of Americans have suffered as a result of Gramm's machinations. And this is John McCain's chief financial advisor, economic advisor. Jesus, God, these people, you know, when you consider Republican senators and the damage they have done. Just take Jesse Helms and Phil Graham. Helms responsible for tens of hundreds of millions of deaths. Graham responsible for the absolute financial failure of millions of families. And they are Republicans. And they have always been Republicans. And there are Republicans out here who would vote for these two vampires again and again and again. The fact that Jesse Helms is dead means nothing. While the destruction Graham has caused is felt across the country, little is known about the seedy business schemes that preceded his political career. Before Graham joined the Christian Coalition's Ralph Reed to call for the defunding of the National Education Administration, before he attacked an opponent for taking money from a gay rights group, and before he was interviewed by the white supremacist Southern Partisan magazine, Graham was an avidly active investor in soft core pornography movies. The journey into porn began way back in 1973 when his brother-in-law rushed to tell him about an exciting low-budget softcore production titled Truck Stop Women. A promo poster for the film boasted of its big-breasted stars. No rig was too big for them to handle. The brother-in-law, who was in charge of fundraising for the production, asked Graham to become an investor. And to entice Mr. Graham, the brother-in-law showed him scenes of Playboy Playmate of that year, Claudia Jennings, totally naked, as she was throughout much of the film. According to the brother-in-law, these scenes, quote, really got Phil titillated, end quote. So Graham immediately cut his brother-in-law a check for $15,000. Because the film was oversold, however, the brother-in-law returned Graham's money, offering him an investment opportunity in an upcoming feature called Beauty Queens, a flick about pageant judges having sex with the contestants. But at the last moment, they decided to shelve the production to make the sequel to Trisha's Wedding, a comedy starring the drag queen troupe, the Cockettes. Must I go on? Thank God there's a commercial break. On the road to my horizon, but you see, I want to be where the light is shining on me, good Lord. Like them rhinestone cowboys, yeah. Riding out on a horse in a star-spangled rodeo. The rhinestone cowboys, getting cards and letters from people like... About 25 before the hour. All right, let's do some of this. What the hell? We have several fish to fry tonight, but let's start with Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke providing to the Senate Banking Committee today the Federal Reserve's monetary policy report to the Congress. Now, as I mentioned at the beginning of the program, if you wondered why Bush held a rare press conference today, you might find the answer in the next five sound bites we're going to play for you. And stay with me on this one. Oh, I hate that stuff, Malloy. No. This is, as CNN says, issue number one. You've got to hear this because you're not going to hear it anyplace else. Trust me. So to divert media coverage from Ben Bernanke's damning testimony in the Senate today, Bush got out there and talked about, well, I understand about oil, gas prices are high. Yeah. Turn off your air conditioner. As you will hear in the next couple of minutes, the economy, according to Ben Bernanke, is a disaster. The Bush crime family is finally reluctantly forced to acknowledge that fact when major U.S. companies like, oh, let me think, General Motors and American Airlines falter, major banks fail, oil and food prices continue to go off the chart, inflation is starting to take off like a rocket, the dollar continues to fall globally, and the two major government-sponsored mortgage lender companies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, teeter on the brink of collapse. Wow. This is a result of Republican policies. Please remember this. I don't give a goddamn who you vote for. Vote for Republicans. But keep in mind who has done this to us. Okay? Okay. Now listen to, as he puts his best foot forward today, bad news Bernanke lays before Congress, what sounds pretty bleak. He testifies that inflationary pressures have intensified and that he sees significant risks to U.S. economic growth. No wonder Monkey Man aped for the cameras today.
The U.S. economy and financial system have confronted some significant challenges thus far in 2008. The contraction in housing activity that began in 2006 and the associated deterioration in mortgage markets that became evident last year have led to sizable losses at financial institutions and a sharp tightening in overall credit conditions.
Uh-huh.
The effects of the housing contraction and of the financial headwinds on spending and economic activity have been compounded by rapid increases in the prices of energy and other commodities, which have sapped household purchasing power even as they have boosted inflation. Against this backdrop, economic activity has advanced at a sluggish pace during the first half of this year, while inflation has remained elevated.
Economic activity has advanced at a sluggish pace? Now, this was the best news that Bad News Ben had to report all day. The Bush crime family needed a much bigger distraction than Dim Sun at the podium talking about, well, I know, you got to turn off your air conditioning. They needed coverage of Cheney shooting somebody in the face at the very least. Next, Bad News Ben detailed the disaster in the housing markets. Yet another domestic crisis that Raisin Brain ignored to spend more time making war and stuff with his what he considers to be personal toy soldiers in Iraq and places like that there. Let's not even get started on the disaster that is getting worse in Afghanistan. So here's Bad News Ben again explaining the government bailout of, let's pick one. How about Bear Stearns?
The economy continues to face numerous difficulties, including ongoing strains in financial markets, declining house prices, a softening labor market, and rising prices of oil, food, and some other commodities.
Yeah.
In the second half of 2007, the deteriorating performance of subprime mortgages in the United States triggered turbulence in domestic and international financial markets as investors became markedly less willing to bear credit risks of any type.
Thanks, Phil Graham!
In the first quarter of 2008, reports of further losses and write-downs at financial institutions intensified investor concerns and resulted in further sharp reductions in market liquidity.
Thanks, Phil Graham.
By March, many dealers and other institutions, even those that had relied heavily on short-term secured financing, were facing much more stringent borrowing conditions. In mid-March, a major investment bank, the Bear Stearns Companies Incorporated, was pushed to the brink of failure after suddenly losing access to short-term financing markets.
Oh, really?
The Federal Reserve judged that a disorderly failure of Bear Stearns would pose a serious threat to overall financial stability and would most likely have significant adverse implications for the U.S. economy.
So how's that working out?
After discussions with the Securities and Exchange Commission and in consultation with the Treasury, we invoked emergency authorities to provide special financing to facilitate the acquisition of Bear Stearns by J.P. Morgan Chase & Company.
Oh, yeah, okay. That's cool, Ben. That really worked to save the economy, didn't it, huh? didn't it? And how much are the terror wars costing us every month now? Huh? $10 billion? Oh, never mind. Okay. Now, in case you're not ready for more happy talk, it's coming. Happy talk about our coming plunge into medieval poverty. Are you ready? Bad News Benny here describes the plan for the government to prop up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And nobody knows at what cost.
Many financial markets and institutions remain under considerable stress, in part because the outlook for the economy and thus for credit quality remains uncertain.
You mean bad?
In recent days, investors became particularly concerned about the financial condition of the government-sponsored enterprises, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Uh-huh.
In view of this development, and given the importance of these firms to the mortgage market, the Treasury announced a legislative proposal to bolster their capital, access to liquidity, and regulatory oversight.
Hit the taxpayer!
As a supplement to the Treasury's existing authority to lend to the GSEs, and as a bridge to the time when the Congress decides how to proceed on these matters, the Board of Governors authorized the Federal Reserve Bank of New York to lend to Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, should that become necessary.
And the reason that was worked out is because, you know, the economy benefited so much from the Bear Stearns bailout, right? Success follows success, doesn't it? Huh, Benny? Now some more uplifting words on unemployment and jobs and housing. So forget a diversion like Dick Cheney with a rifle. We need Colin Powell on a stage in Hanoi in a hula skirt and a coconut bra.
In the labor market, private payroll employment has declined this year, falling at an average pace of 94,000 jobs per month through June.
Jesus.
Employment in the construction and manufacturing sectors has been particularly hard hit, although employment declines in a number of other sectors are evident as well.
Yeah.
The unemployment rate has risen and now stands at 5.5%.
Sure it does.
In the housing sector, activity continues to weaken. Although sales of existing homes have been about unchanged this year, sales of new homes have continued to fall, and inventories of unsold new homes remain high.
Got any good news?
In response, home builders continue to scale back the pace of housing starts. Home prices are falling, particularly in regions that experienced the largest price increases earlier this decade.
Where's the razor blade?
The declines in home prices have contributed to the rising tide of foreclosures.
Oh, yeah, that.
By adding to the stock of vacant homes for sale, these foreclosures have in turn intensified the downward pressure on home prices in some areas.
Now, do you understand, Truth Seeker, why they ran chuckle nuts out there today? Get out there, boy. Take some questions. I don't want to. Get out there! Son of a bitch, Ben Bernanke is explaining to the American public that the whole goddamn house is on fire. Get out there, quick! I don't want to. Get your ass out there and talk. Okay. So while they're prepping chuckle nuts, Bernanke continues. What about oil prices and run amok inflation in general?
Inflation has remained high, running at nearly a 3.5% annual rate over the first 5 months of this year, as measured by the price index for personal consumption expenditures. And with gasoline and other consumer energy prices rising in recent weeks, inflation seems likely to move temporarily higher in the near term.
Oh, good!
The elevated level of overall consumer inflation largely reflects a continued sharp run-up in the prices of many commodities, especially oil, but also certain crops and metals.
Stuff to eat.
The spot price of West Texas Intermediate crude oil soared about 60% in 2007, and thus far this year has climbed an additional 50% or so.
Oh, my God.
The price of oil currently stands at about five times its level toward the beginning of this decade. The decline in the foreign exchange value of the dollar has also contributed somewhat to the increase in oil prices.
Boy, I'll tell you what, old Chuckle Nut sure knew how to spend that Bill Clinton surplus, didn't he? Huh? And let me remind you of one other thing, Truth Seeker. This monkey-ass freak wanted to put Social Security into the stock market. Remember that? Huh? And didn't those filthy Republicans just claw all over each other and say, yeah, let's do that?
That's a good idea. Let's put it in the stock market. Yeah, because you know why? Because the adults are in charge now. Yeah, let's do that. Put it in the stock market. Yeah. God damn it.
Bon, de partir n'importe où, bras dessus, bras dessus.
So if you're a younger worker out there, you're now looking at more people retiring who will be living longer, and those you have to keep paying more monthly benefits over time, who've been promised greater monthly benefits.
What?
I think younger workers, first of all, younger workers have been promised benefits the government, that promises that have been promised benefits that we can't keep. That's just the way it is.
What?
If you watch your money grow, you know it compounds over time, which means money grows and grows bigger and bigger and bigger.
Jesus. Okay. Now, after listening to all those minutes of Ben Bernanke telling us that the house is on fire, we're all going to die, the big ride is over. Capitalism is dead. Not that we have capitalism in this country. I don't know what the hell it is, but it's damn sure not capitalism. But it's all over. It's finished. It's just a matter of time. Get ready. Join the military. Do something. In the midst of all that, here's Mensa Man, the decider. And he's got a plan to rescue America from total economic collapse, doesn't he? Here's a bit of wisdom from his intentionally distracting press conference today. He was asked about the government's coming bailout of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae, the big mortgage lenders. The question was,
Mr. President, are America's banks in trouble? And does the rescue of Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae make more bailouts inevitable by sending the message that there are some institutions that are too big to fail, even though you've goddamn tried? I added that last part. It's okay to take risks.
First, let me talk about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Okay.
A lot of people in the country probably don't understand how important they are to the mortgage markets.
Okay.
And it's really important for people to have confidence in the mortgage markets and that there be stability in the mortgage markets.
There used to be!
And that's why Secretary Paulson announced the plan this weekend, which says that he needs authorities from the Congress to... You know, come up with a line of credit for these institutions, if needed.
Line of credit?
And that he ought to have the authority to invest capital, if needed.
What capital?
And so the purpose was to send a clear signal that, one, we understand how important these institutions are to the mortgage markets, and, two, to kind of calm nerves.
Well, son of a bitch, you're not calming mine! Calm nerves! I need Phil Graham. Phil, show me some of them old porn films that you invested in. Holy jumping Jesus. A lot of people in the country probably don't understand how important Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are to the mortgage markets. Hey, chuckle nuts. You probably thought they were hip-hop artists before you were briefed on the latest financial disaster you caused this week. Finally, reporter just asked the delusional idiot this simple question. When will the economy turn around?
I'm not an economist, but I do believe that we're growing.
I believe in tooth fairy.
I can remember, you know, this press conference here, people yelling recession this, recession that, as if you're economists. And I'm an optimist.
Yeah.
You know, I believe there's a lot of positive things for our economy.
Yeah, name one.
But I will tell you, it's not growing the way it should, and I'm sorry people are paying as high gasoline prices as they are.
Oh.
And all I know is good policy will help expedite, you know, will strengthen our economy.
Will you leave office?
I certainly hope it changes tomorrow, but it's I'm also realistic to know things don't change on a dime.
Or a dollar.
The economy is growing.
The economy is growing? No, it isn't, but your nose is. Do you even listen to Ben Bernanke ever? Did you listen today, you dumb, lying bastard? Are you serious about this? You believe that we're growing? And you believe in Santa and the Tooth Fairy, right? I can remember this press conference here where people yelling, recession this and recession that, as if you're economies. As if you're economists. Oh, snap! Damn, got me on that one, didn't you there, chuckle nuts? And I'm an optimist. Yeah, and obviously a brain-dead, delusional psycho killer, too. But what's that got to do with the fact that I'm losing my house? I'm sorry people are paying as high gasoline prices as they are. I mean, Christ, I already gave up golf. Maybe I'll quit tennis to show solidarity with the hordes of little people. Will that work? No, that's what my mom would say. What can I give up? Oh, Jesus, not my Game Boy. Do you think it will change before you leave office? Well, I certainly hope it changes tomorrow. You know, I have a friend who said to me one time, hey, Malloy, hope for something in one hand and fill up the other with cow dung and see which one fills up quicker. The economy's growing. You're damn right. This economy's growing. I'm George Bush, and I approve this message. The economy's growing. I don't care what Ben Bernanke says. I don't give a damn what these FDIC people say, and I don't care how many banks fail or how many people go belly up. The economy is growing, and you can take that to the bank. Okay, not the bank. So, you know, someplace. I don't know. Take it somewhere. Take it to the gas station. Maybe. Welcome back. I'm sorry, I got a little carried away that last hour. I don't know, it's madness. It really is. You listen to someone like Ben Bernanke sit there and in a very dead, I mean, his voice is like Cindy McCain's eyes. Absolutely dead, lifeless, snake-like. But there, Ben Bernanke sat today while the Bush crime family diverted everyone's attention to chuckle nuts. Standing, where did he stand? The Rose Garden? The Weed Garden? Where was he standing? Who cares? But there he was. The cameras always go to the bigger train wreck. You ever notice that? So the cameras go to Chuckle Nuts while Ben Bernanke sits there and tells us that everything is collapsing, falling apart. Did you hear anything in Bernanke's testimony to the contrary? Did you hear of any of Bernanke's testimony, period? Of course not. But if you are a listener to this program, you now have heard his testimony. Talk about a Cassandra. Hey, everything's okay. There's no problem. What the hell? I mean, why is everybody getting upset? Everything's all right. It really is. Bush is an optimist. He's not an economist, but he is an optimist. Things will get better. It'll get better. It'll get... Oh, Christ. Mike in St. Paul writes, how bad is the economy? I work at a service firm, and we are very, very busy. We interview one individual or married couple every 30 minutes. In fact, we are double booking appointments at this time. What service do we provide? Consumer bankruptcy. Boy, say what you will about Bill Clinton, and I certainly have said enough. I just, you know. But remember back in the day, even though it was all smoke and mirrors, who cares? Remember when the NASDAQ hit 5,000? Oh, sweet Jesus. Do you remember when Bill left office and he handed off to George W. Bush something like a $3.7 trillion projected surplus over the next 10 years? Remember that? And the budget had been balanced and it was in black ink for what, the preceding three years? Do you remember that? I don't know. It's just a little weird. It's getting harder and harder. I don't know about you. I've got a problem. I've got a problem. My job for Nova M Radio is similar to what I've heard airline pilots say their jobs are: long hours of extreme boredom interspersed with moments of absolute sheer terror. I don't compare myself to an airline pilot at all, but I have way too much time during the day to think. I've tried everything. I even had a friend send me Tom Hartman's book on walking. I swim. I've tried to meditate, but it feels like my head is full of bees. I have a 4-year-old almost for distraction, but I still have way too much time to think. And so I think to myself, well, all of this stuff going on, this is not real. This is not really happening to the land of the free and the home of the brave. It's not happening in Afghanistan. It's not happening in Iraq. It's not happening down the street. It's not happening here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. It can't be. Can't be happening. Whistle a happy tune. Read a book. Play with your kid. Come here, Molly. You want to play? No? Okay, bye. But I do get a bit concerned about all this, don't you? More than a bit concerned. I get the emails. I get emails from people who listen to this program and who write to me stuff. I mean real stuff. Not, you know, I'm not talking about the freaks who say, "You goddamn queer, why don't you leave the country and go over there and eat some Jews?" You know, not that kind of stuff. I get real emails from people who are having real problems. Not, you know, not emailing me to make a loan or put their name on the internet. Just, you know, just like almost a personal correspondence. People I don't know. People I haven't met. People who I'll never meet and will never meet me. But you know, they'll send me an email and sometimes I answer. Sometimes I really do. I read them and I read these emails and I see what's going on out here. I mean, the stories. And I don't have to get this stuff through emails. I can read the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the local newspaper. Georgia, or Atlanta, is one of the areas being hardest hit with these mortgage collapses. And one of the reasons is because Atlanta has a massive African-American population. And the fraudulent sons of bitches who set this thing up, starting with Phil Gramm, and working all the way up to this particular moment, right now, targeted so many African-American families.
Well, they're stupid. They don't know anything about buying a house. 'Cause, well, first place, we didn't let them buy a house for a long damn time. So let's get them.
And get them they did. So I have a front row seat. The emails that come in from, I don't know who, black, white, Jew, Gentile, gay, straight, I don't know. They're just people who write in. But here in Atlanta, in the metro Atlanta area. We all are very acutely aware of what's going on here. And it is, it's beyond sad. You can't divorce yourself from this. I can't. Let me use the right pronoun. I can't sit back and say, well, my house is financed through, what is it? What do we have, Gabby? Huh?
Our credit union.
Credit union. Thank you. I was having another senior moment. And credit unions don't do this. They're nonprofit. They're depositor owned. So this will never, ever, ever, ever happen if you have your house financed through a credit union. You never hear of credit unions going belly up, do you? Oh, goddamn, got to step in here and rescue the credit unions. No, you don't hear that. Now, I'm not smart enough in this particular field to understand why that is, except for the fact that when we bought our house, it was when we first got the house, we had a mortgage company. And within 6 months, we had been flipped to three other companies. It was insane as they chopped up our mortgage. We were right in there with it, only not on some stupid-ass subprime loan nonsense. We just took a standard loan until we finally realized, wait a minute, this is about six years ago. Wait a minute, what the hell is going on? So we immediately went and should have done this to begin with, went to our credit union and said, help! And they said, sure, sign here. We did. End of story. But even so, and that's not security in the sense, I'm not saying, oh, well, gee, I don't feel anything ever happened to me. I work in radio. That's like working in the auto industry. Job could disappear tomorrow. It won't, not with Nova M, but I'm just saying. But I hear this, and I read about this, and I see this, and I see the tragedy. I see families who did nothing but want to be part of what this son of a bitch George Bush called, well, let's get some of the ownership society going here. Step right up. Hiya, hiya. And people stepped right up. And now these right-wing, rapacious bastards want to blame the victims. I want to blame the victims. I'm not saying they're not house speculators out there. Of course there were. Mostly rich, white Republicans who said, son of a bitch, look at this. Hey, let's go out and buy ourselves 10 houses, no money down. Don't have to pay anything. Let's do it. Let's do it. I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the people who, married couples with kids and a dog and goldfish and had a chance. All of a sudden they were being told, hey, look here, you can buy a house. And now they're being told, hey, look here, you can live in your car.
Oh, it's okay too if you see your bank. Well, you know what to do. Now let me tell you people something. Only banks I like Ernie Banks, all right. And I like the banks of the Mississippi River. And I like banks of Fender Twin Reverb. Well, when I walk in there, treat me like a dog, wanna hit him in the head with the doo doo log. Republicans, one and all, their tallywhackers are mighty small. Steal from the poor and to give to the rich. Wanna...
about anything here in Washington, D.C.
It's 21 past the hour. All right, the latest breaking news from the world of the super rich. Have you heard about this? It's reported by Brian Ross and Rhonda Schwartz at ABC News. A technician, a bank clerk, Heinrich Kieber in Liechtenstein, has outed the names of Americans with secret bank accounts. Accounts set up to avoid paying taxes. ABC News reports it this way. Hundreds of super-rich American tax cheats have discovered their names are at the IRS after a bank computer technician in the tiny European country of Liechtenstein came forward with the names of U.S. citizens who had set up secret accounts there. According to Washington lawyers investigating the scheme, the bank clerk, Heinrich Kieber, has been branded a thief by the government of Liechtenstein for violating the country's bank secrecy laws. He is now in hiding, but scheduled to testify to the Senate's Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations Thursday via a video statement from a secret location, according to congressional investigators. Well, I would hope to shout. It's secret. Of course he's hiding. Rich American tax, super rich American tax cheats? They'll have this son of a bitch killed and chopped into so many pieces that the largest one would fit into a matchbox with room left over for a... He is now in hiding. Aides for committee chairman Carl Levin are scheduled to provide reporters with a background briefing on the committee's investigation of tax haven banks in Liechtenstein and Switzerland. Aides say the hearing will also focus on the role of the giant Swiss bank UBS and its efforts to help wealthy Americans hide their money from the IRS through shell companies in Liechtenstein. UBS. Oh, that's right. Phil Graham is a vice chairman of UBS. That's right! Phil Graham, the economic advisor to John McCain's presidential campaign for the past year. Phil Graham, who has been paid by UBS in addition to his duties as the vice chairman to lobby the Congress of the United States about the U.S. mortgage crisis.
You son of a bitch.
Phil Graham. God, I'd love to spend a few moments in a darkened room with Phil Graham. Wouldn't you? Huh? Aides to Carl Levin say the hearing will focus on the role of giant Swiss bank UBS and its efforts to help wealthy Americans hide their money from the IRS through shell companies in Liechtenstein. Liechtenstein's veil of secrecy was pierced 5 years ago when the disgruntled technician, Herr Kieber, downloaded the names of foreign citizens connected to the secret accounts. Kieber reportedly sold, that's my boy, 3 CDs full of names and data to tax authorities in 12 countries, including Germany, Great Britain, France, Italy, and the United States. Tax authorities in Italy published the list of names in full. A former UBS private banker, Bradley Birkenfeld, has agreed to a plea deal and is reported to be cooperating with U.S. authorities to bring charges against American citizens on tax evasion. The names of the U.S. citizens involved are now in the hands of the IRS and Senate investigators. Washington lawyers say a number of prominent citizens have been subpoenaed to testify, but have already indicated they will refuse to testify, asserting their Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination. It is not clear whether Senator Levin will insist they appear in front of the committee anyway.
Oh!
Secret accounts set up by the giant Swiss bank UBS specifically and categorically to help wealthy, super-rich Americans hide their money from the IRS through shell companies. The sons of bitches only pay about 13% anyway.
That's too much, Mike. That's about 11% too much.
Of course, you'll never know that, Mike, because you'll never be super rich.
UBS! Phil Graham! Vice Chairman of UBS. Why isn't Phil Graham in prison?
if you're worried about people finding work, you better increase demand. If you're trying to create new jobs. In other words, if one worker can do more work,
yeah,
you got to create the need for more work.
Yeah! Yeah, goddamn right, that'll work, yeah! That's how that works! Yeah!
Speaking of UBS, Billy writes, isn't UBS the name of the TV network that Ed Beal was part of in...
Network?
I believe it was. This is incredible stuff, isn't it? UBS with Phil Graham and his wife, Wendy. Wendy sat on the board of directors of Enron. I mean, these people, these Republicans, these inner members of the Bush crime family, are beyond corrupt. I mean, the word corrupt doesn't apply. It just doesn't apply. There's got to be a bigger word. There's got to be a word that is more encompassing of the crimes that these people commit on a daily basis. The way you and I breathe, these people commit crimes. Financial crimes. Crimes against whatever ethical, the prevailing ethical standards are, whatever the prevailing moral standards are at any given time. It doesn't matter. Morality, ethics, it all changes. It changes over the course of history, doesn't it? But it doesn't make any difference to people like Phil and Wendy Graham and Dick and what's her name, Cheney, and the Bush crime. All these people, it makes no difference what the prevailing standards happen to be at any given moment in history. These sons of bitches will violate it. Doesn't make any difference what the standards are. Phil Graham and UBS. But this will probably turn out like the sex worker madam's little black book in Washington, D.C. that contained all the names of all these high-ranking Republicans. Oh, Jesus. This is going to be so much fun. Remember that story? Right into the commode. Gone. No story. Wait, I wanted to know their names. Sorry. How about this story? Huh? Brian Ross, chief investigative reporter at ABC. He's got it. Hey, look here. Damn! Senate Banking Committee's going to take a look at this. Yeah, they're going to disclose. Hell, in Italy, they published the names of everybody on the newspaper. In Germany, the disclosures led to the arrest of several prominent CEOs on charges they had evaded billions of dollars in taxes. So what do you think's going to happen here? Huh? Committee Chairman Carl Levin, Democrat, Michigan. He's the one whose Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations will hold this hearing day after tomorrow via a video statement from poor little bank clerk Heinrich Kieber. Hi, my name is Heinrich Kieber, and I'm already dead. It's just a matter of time. Oh, my God. So what do you think will happen to this investigation? Yeah. But the names, you see, should be published. It should be common knowledge. There should be no such thing as secret banking laws for offshore corporations like, oh, I don't know, pick one. Halliburton, KBR. Why should there be? These sons of bitches suck up billions upon billions of taxpayer dollars. And then stand there and give us all the finger and say, what? You want to know what? Screw you. While they provide our military with stuff that kills our military. Oh, well, you know, secret banking laws. Secrecy, you see, only is applicable to those who can afford to purchase it. Your phone calls, your email messages, your personal transmissions, whatever they are. Are you serious? The FBI knows every time you fart. Do you understand that? They keep a fart file on you. Everything! There he goes again. Get that. You got that one? Yeah, I got that. Okay, good. But Halliburton?
Well, let's go rip off another 100 million today. Okay, well, can we do that? Well, hell yeah. We're, you know, what? Nobody's going to know. Who's going to know about it? Well, they're not going to know about it? No, we got protection from secrecy laws. Only just one thing. Don't fart because, you know, that becomes a matter of public record.
Did you get that?
Yeah.
It's insane. Remember the name, because it'll appear in an obituary somewhere soon. Heinrich Kieber, K-I-E-B-E-R. Heinrich Kieber, the bank clerk in Liechtenstein, who copied it all down, put it on CDs, and gave it to the authorities in five countries. Goodbye, Heinrich, and thank you. We do appreciate it. This just in. From Eric in Ohio, over the weekend, Mike, the Green Party nominated former Democratic Party Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney for President of the United States. McKinney will be the real progressive in this race, but progressives will not support her. McKinney could be president if we, the people, would wake up to the fact that it's the Democrats and Republicans who are telling us that they are the only viable choices. McKinney will be excluded from all the debates by the Democrats and Republicans because they want to limit our exposure to real solutions for the energy crisis, the housing crisis, the war in Iraq, etc., etc. The only solutions coming from Obama and McCain are the same old corporate-approved solutions. And until we, the people, do wake up, the corporate-owned status quo will go merrily on, crushing us underfoot. Eric in Ohio. So how about that, Kathy? Oh, Cynthia pulled it off. She is the Green Party nominee for President of the United States. She used to be our representative in Congress. We know Cynthia. I probably know her more so than Kathy does because I've known Cynthia and her crazed old man for probably 25 years. And her father, Billy, is, when I say old man, I mean her father, Billy, is just an absolute raving lunatic. Just completely insane. I think that's why she ran for president. If she does get elected, she can have him renditioned someplace. I don't know, Poland maybe, where they can shut him up. John Conyers, who chairs the House Judiciary Committee, is going to hold a hearing sometime in August, well, sometime before the August recess, according to Congressional Quarterly Politics, CQ Politics. There's a report that Conyers' committee will hold a hearing to consider the efforts at impeachment being made by Dennis Kucinich over and over again. Chairman John Conyers said judiciary will take a broad look at the behavior of the Bush administration, and Kucinich can lay out his arguments as part of that as yet unscheduled hearing. However, Conyers says he wants a public discussion of the issues being raised by Kucinich, but does not plan to take any action on the resolution. Mr. Conyers said, quote, we're not doing impeachment, but he can talk about it, end quote. We're not doing impeachment, but he can talk about it. Jesus God. Kucinich has made a crusade of his efforts to impeach these monsters. And what has he gotten? He's gotten ignored. He's gotten ridiculed. You know, I hope history... Oh, this is wishful thinking. But there was a time in my life when I would have hoped history would record that Dennis Kucinich is truly the only one who has stepped up and stepped forward and forced this issue. I know a couple of other members of Congress have talked about it, including Cynthia McKinney. But Kucinich has been the one who has pushed this issue and pushed this issue and pushed this issue. I say there was a time in my life when I would have hoped history would record this, but I know now that history is not recorded that way at all. Conyers said he wants a public discussion of the issues being raised by Kucinich, but does not plan to take any action on the impeachment resolution. Mr. Conyers said, quote, "We're not doing impeachment, but he can talk about it," end quote.
Where have all the good men gone, and where are all the gods? Where the streetwise person leads the fight to rise in us? Isn't there a white knight upon the fiery sea? Late at night I touch and I turn and I dream of what I see. I need a hero.
Will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
And when you get the chance, you are the dancing queen.
Well, you always know when I'm getting depressed, because that's when we play Dancing Queen. It's about the only song left that makes me feel good. Makes me want to get all dressed up, put on some eyeshadow, and go to the club. From the LA Daily News comes this. If you've watched any television in the past couple of days, you see the lines of people outside the IndyMac bank branches all over Southern California demanding their money back or demanding that their money be freed. Well, the Daily News is now reporting that the police are ordering the customers lined up outside the IndyMac bank branches to remain calm or face arrest.
Son of a bitch.
At least three police squad cars showed up early Tuesday as tensions rose outside the San Fernando Valley branch of Pasadena-based IndyMac. Worried customers with deposits in excess of the insured limits, that'll be 100 grand, flooded IndyMac bank branches on Monday, demanding to withdraw as much money as they could or get answers about the fate of their funds. Now, yesterday, employees took down names because the crowd was so big and told them to return today, and customers began lining up today, Tuesday at 1:30 in the morning. And according to the LA Daily News, tensions escalated because people on the list were getting priority. And then, of course, they opened the gates to the bank, five people allowed in at a time. Customers became infuriated, and police told them they would be arrested if they didn't remain calm. Police stood by at other branches around Southern California, but there were no other reports of problems. You will remain calm. You will not get rowdy. This would be the time to call in Blackwater, wouldn't it? I mean, the police in Southern California certainly have other things to do. They have all those illegal immigrants just flooding across the borders. They've got all the drug runners and dope dealers and people like that. So wouldn't this be a great time to call in Blackwater or one of those DynCorp, one of those other private militarized fascist police organizations? What a perfect time to give them some on-the-job training. Here are citizens lined up wanting their money out of an institution that has crashed because of the policies instituted and applied against the American people by a government that is very close and friendly with Blackwater. You see, everything is kind of synchronistic, and it all fits together. So why not call out Blackwater at this point and say to these citizens who are getting unruly, you will shut up, you will stand in line, you will wait your turn, you will not get frustrated, you will not panic, you will not feel anxiety, or God damn it, we'll kill you! How's that? No, you don't think that would happen? Okay. Can you believe this? I mean, seriously, can you? I got an email from somebody who said his father and one of his father's buddies took the emailer, I would assume, from the tone of the letter. The emailer is probably in his 20s or 30s, and the old man and his buddies are probably in their 60s. But dad and one of the buddies took the young man out to dinner and tried to explain to the young man that this mortgage crisis was all Clinton's fault. It's all good. See, the past 8 years haven't happened. That's right. The 2001 September 11th tragedy was all Clinton's fault. That's right. The mortgage meltdown, Clinton's fault. The destruction of the dollar globally, Clinton's fault. The quintupling, octupling of oil prices, Clinton's fault. It's all Clinton's fault. Everything is Clinton's fault. That's the thing about Republicans. They are an aggrieved bunch, aren't they? They are all victims. Republicans have raised victimhood to an art.
It's not our fault. We're the ones suffering. We're victims. Those goddamn liberals. They'll do it to you every time. They own the media. They own the banks. They own everything. Liberals, they own the government. They always do it to us. Jesus, when's this going to stop?
You see, conservatives or Republicans are clinically and collectively mad. Totally insane. So to the young man who wrote to me, I wish I had an answer for you. I said, just tell them they're goddamn liars and ask them for the proof. But, I don't know if he can talk to his old man that way. Hey, Dad, you're a goddamn liar. Okay, I know. This is a very disjointed program tonight. I listened to Ben Bernanke after the first 30 minutes of the program, from these sound bites that Catherine provided, and I'm just, I don't know, since I listened to that and Chuckle Nuts's comments, I don't know. Things are spinning, The room is growing dark. There's spiders all over, and I see manta rays flopping on the floor underneath the desk here. Jesus, get them out of here. We'll try to get straight and come back and take your phone calls. The number here is 800-989-1480. Stay with us. I'm still Mike Malloy. too much Moody Blues. It makes me want to go outside and run around, get out of my skin and run around on my bones after getting exceedingly high. Can't do that anymore. 7 past the hour. This is Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy. Thanks for sticking around. Let's go to some phone calls here. The number is 800-989-1480. Barry is calling from Texas, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Barry.
Yeah, Mike, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I just wanted to make a comment. The game to watch is there's unsecured debt and these bad loans over onto government secured. Like a couple of months ago, you know, they were, you know, the Federal Reserve asked Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae to assume some of these loans, and they raised the credit limit, you know, up to $700,000 where they could assume these loans. All of a sudden, they turn around and said, well, you know, they're in trouble. We need to bail them out. Well, you know, maybe they wouldn't have been in trouble if you hadn't asked them to assume all these loans, you know. So it's steadily moving this, losses over onto the public. You know, we're going to pay for it.
Sure, sure. Well, it's my understanding, economic matters are like the mortician's trade. It's the dismal trade to me. But it's my understanding that in the past 7 years under Bush, even Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which are not government, a lot of people think those are government organizations, which they are not. Freddie Mae and Freddie Mac were allowed to operate almost without any oversight, which is true of just about every single, what's the word I'm looking for? Not organization, but every single enterprise, every single engine of capitalism during the Bush years has been allowed to operate with no oversight at all. Now, when that happens, capitalism is an insane policy to begin with. Eventually, it has to collapse. By its own definition, eventually, capitalism becomes predatory and then collapses. Now, it may take a century. It may take 200 years. It may take 10 years, depending on how it is run. But eventually, capitalism has to collapse. So I think after 230 years of capitalism in this country, the first 80 or 100 of which was based on slave labor, I think all of a sudden the Bush people realized when they took over, oh, my God, we're right on the cusp of this collapsing. Let's steal, smash and grab as much as we can before the whole house of cards comes down. So regarding Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, I think that was absolutely the case with them, too. Granted, they were asked to absorb some of this lousy, crappy, fraudulent loans engineered by lending institutions in this country, most namely banks and the hedge fund operators and so on and so forth. But Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac themselves had been operating without supervision. So God only knows what kind of deals they cut that the regulatory agencies heard nothing about.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. You know, it's just a shame, you know, that it's like a shell game where, you know,
where we have to pay. We have to pay.
Right.
We have to pay.
They're transferring all this liability over to the American taxpayer. So the Republicans, in effect, are raising your taxes big time. Because they're handling you this bill for it's private profit and public liability.
There you go.
You got to pay when they lose money.
Let me ask you something off topic, Barry. I've read an article in the Nation magazine that Texas is about to go blue again. Is that true? Is the Texas Democratic Party making a comeback?
Well, you know, it's really hard to say. Because Obama's really got a hard road to hoe. You know?
Yeah, sure.
I think if what's curious to me about it is that Obama is really not from the South. He's not, he didn't grow up being a Southerner,
right,
black.
Right.
He didn't grow up in Detroit. You know, he grew up in Hawaii. So he's kind of different in a way, in that in one way he doesn't try to tag him with that, you know. And it's really hard to judge whether the American people or the Texas people mm-hmm. are going to consider him a black guy, you know, or a guy running for president who happens to be black, or a black guy. You know,
right,
it's,
yeah.
It's really hard to judge.
Sure, that makes sense. Whereas Obama might carry Texas only by default because he happens to be at the top of the Democratic Party ticket. I think mainly what I was talking about, but I appreciate what you said. That was good insight. Mainly what I was talking about was state politics, congressional delegations, whether it's, you know, I understand John Cornyn has a definite competition. I understand that the Texas House delegation is the Republicans are facing some real problems. And I think mainly what I'm thinking about, you know, Texas produced Molly Ivins and Jim Hightower and Richards and some really powerful populist Democrats. You know, some of them were a little bit more conservative than your average national Democrat, but they were populist Democrats. They were the kind of Democrats that they're able to get things done and don't scare the bejesus out of people with a lot of left-wing rhetoric. Not that there's anything wrong with left-wing rhetoric, but you know what I'm talking about. So I'm just curious as to whether or not the Democratic Party in Texas is making a comeback strong enough that would carry Obama. You see what I'm saying? Usually it's the top of the ticket that carries the bottom, not necessarily so where it concerns Texas in this particular instance. So I hope what the nation wrote about this week is true, that Texas is, you know, they're calling it the blue star state of Texas. A lot of wishful thinking in that, but I'd love to see it happen. Texas be the new California. Who knows, right?
Well, you know, you've got a point, and it's a definite possibility. You know, I mean, basically what it boils down to is how stupid people are.
Yeah,
well, you know, I mean, if they wise up, you know, it probably will turn blue. But, you know, if they just continue on, like we still have Kay Bailey Hutchison, which is, you know,
I know. Yeah.
Bizarre. You know, I mean, you know, the lady that said, well, you know, it's technicality that you, you know, outed all the CIA people overseas, you know, I mean, and exposed them to all this danger, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous, but I, you know, I really think that Texas in a way is wise enough in that, you know, we're a very large state, yeah. And somebody on CNBC made a real good point in that every time that Congress increases the CAFE standards, you know, more mileage,
right?
Basically, people just move farther and farther out into the suburbs, and they have to drive farther to work. Well, that's the situation in Texas, and the gas is really hurting Texas right now. The price of gas, because people are commuting from, like, say, Brenham to downtown Houston, and that's a long way to commute, and it's taking up all their family budget, you know. But you know, they may, you know, it may be that it turns around. You know,
well, I hope not just Texas, but so many places in the country that have flirted for the past 30 years with being first Reagan Democrats and then just giving it up and becoming Republicans. I hope they understand what they've done. Barry, good to hear from you. I hope you call again. Thanks, pal. Appreciate your insights. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
big concerns early on was the southern oil fields. And at least in the south, they are secure. And that is positive news for all of us.
Open your eyes, time to wake up. Enough is enough, is enough, is enough. Open your eyes.
22 past the hour. Jack is calling from Phoenix, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Jack, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Mike.
Hi.
You know, in your one of your darker moments, have you ever opened your mind to the possibility that the housing bubble was not an accident?
Well, I don't think it was an accident in the strictest sense. Do you mean targeted against certain people in this country?
Yes.
I've toyed with that idea, but not really. I haven't given a whole lot of thought. What's your take on it?
Okay, look, I started following housing religiously about 2 or 3 hours a day starting in October 2004. And, I mean, it's something that I always suspected, but I couldn't prove. But this last spring, I ran across an article. It's in the April 28th edition of Barron's Magazine, a highly respected economic magazine.
Right.
And this article has never been reported on the mainstream media. It's never been on CNBC, the LA Times, the Phoenix, Arizona Republic. And the gist of the magazine is that for over 30 years, Alan Greenspan tried desperately to hide the fact that his 1977 doctoral thesis at the University of New York was on housing bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
This was a man who understood the dimensions of a housing bubble, how you create it, what happens when it pops. He had page after page of algebraic computations. And the thing is, they set this up because they allowed anybody that could breathe to get a mortgage.
Right.
They also allowed collateralized debt obligations to be set up.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have a situation where, in actuality, you really don't know who owns your mortgage.
That's right.
Because it's bought and sold. And it's basically priced as a bond. It's rated.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, right now, we are on the verge of a monumental collapse. And in my opinion, nobody can say that this was an accident. Alan Greenspan knew what he was doing.
What would be his motive to bring this economic system absolutely into the gutter? What would be his motive?
I mean, I've studied the neocon philosophy of Carl Schmitt and Leo Strauss extensively.
Right.
I have for 4 years. And once you understand the underpinnings of this religion, you realize, you know, it's metastasizing over the entire country.
Well, the only thing I could come up with is what they advocate, the Straussians, is almost a return to feudalism. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
I basically, when I looked at this several years ago, I came to the conclusion that they wanted to turn us into a society of sharecroppers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay? And the easiest way to do it is to destroy the equity in people's houses. Have you ever heard, Mike, of the Case-Shiller Index?
I don't think so. Not off the top of my head, no.
Okay. Well, the Case-Shiller Index was created by Robert Shiller about 10 years ago. And he's a highly respected economist. He predicted the crash of the dot-com bubble back in 2000. And this index shows that the housing bubble that we had was the biggest in American history.
Mm-hmm.
It was several magnitudes bigger than anything we've ever had. So if you created something that massive, you had to understand it was going to pop.
Right, right.
And the thing is, right now, Mike, we have 13 million homeowners that are underwater. When they're underwater on their mortgage, they're 14 times as likely to move into foreclosure.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know, you understand the way these tranches work, or these collateralized debt obligations. The ones that were basically sold back in 2006 and 2007 as all-day mortgages and option arms, they are defaulting at a rate of 32%.
All right, so you know, this is incredibly interesting, Jack, but I've got to take a break here. So let me just suggest what you're getting to eventually here is that we ain't seen nothing yet, that the real collapse is still coming.
Yes. Do you want to know more? Can I give you my blog?
Yeah, absolutely. Do it.
Okay, look, I work with a guy named Ernest Hancock. He runs a site that Jeff Farias knows. It's called Freedom's Phoenix. I blog there every day on the economy and on the Federal Reserve.
Freedomsphoenix.blogspot.com?
No, just freedomsphoenix.com.
Okay, FreedomsPhoenix.com.
Correct.
FreedomsPhoenix.com.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, we'll go there. We'll check it out. Thanks a lot, Jack. I appreciate it. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, this is evident, yeah. In the American way, you must give and I shall take. I will tell you what is moral and what's just. Because I want.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Before the hour. You're listening to Nova M Radio. I'm Mike Malloy. Don't even try going to freedomsphoenix.com right now. We have apparently made it impossible to get on that site. So give it a try a little bit later. freedomsphoenix.com. Back to your phone calls. Elizabeth is calling from Virginia, listening on the via the Internet. Hey, Elizabeth.
Hi, Mike. I listened to you from 1998 during the impeachment of Clinton. And,
oh, my God.
And a dying brother, and I wrote to you from when you were in Chicago. But I have so many notes writing that I've made tonight on everything you were talking about. But one thing is, what do you do with a broken heart? Because, and then the other thought was fight or flight. What do we do with this broken country?
Mm-hmm.
I do have a couple little pieces of information to put on. You mentioned John Conyers this morning on C-SPAN, the New York rep, and he's well known, and I can't think of his name, but somebody called in about impeachment, and he said it would be, I'm not quoting correctly, that this wasn't the time to do it because Bush only had so few months left. But also because of the political buildup for the presidency, which is, this is all a bunch of bull. But in the current issue of Ms. Magazine today, this had the story about how it's financed by women. There are no ads, so they're not obligated to listen to or be a talk to about what they portray in their magazine. But this is two of the women, the madam from Washington, D.C.,
uh-huh.
She hanged herself. It was down south behind her mother's house. She went back in a shed.
Right.
And then there was another one down in Louisiana. And part of this had to do with an article they have on that Louisiana Senator David Vitek,
uh-huh.
Is that his name? Yeah, so it was all in conjunction with that. And then, it's just so unfair to women because the women pay the price.
Right.
And then on Cherry Gross today on Fresh Air, she interviewed, I think her name was Jane Meyer. She's written a book called, I believe the title was The Dark Side. This is a quote from, I hate to say his name, Cheney. Was the Sunday after 9/11, mm-hmm. that we'll have to take the dark side meaning and approach to how we're going to handle this. But she has documentation of the torture that's mm-hmm. been done to the people, this so-called ethical country. My heart is broken. It just everything what we've been doing. And this has been 1998 when I first wrote to you, mm-hmm. and things have not improved at all. Only gotten worse. But one of the cases, and then I'll get off because you've given me, I have made so many notes on what you wrote today, but I'll tell you the last person that she talked about, well, the last one that I heard on the on Terry Gross's talk show was the man had a prosthesis for one of his legs. And as his punishment, that prosthesis was removed, and he was not allowed to use it. He had to hobble about, make his way. I don't know the whole thing, but it's just a new book. Her name is Jane Meyer.
I'm very familiar with her. She has been writing for The New Yorker, and I believe she also wrote for The New York Times at one point. You're close enough on that title. I'm not exactly sure what it is.
Yeah, it's something. It's a quote from Cheney, the
right.
Dark Side, something like that. But I have notes of everything that you have been talking about tonight, and I feel sometimes is it fight or flight? What do we do? Fight or flight? And I am so disappointed in this country. And I don't want to hand this country over to our children and grandchildren. It just, and you have your little girl, your mm-hmm. Molly, and it's just horrible to comprehend why have we allowed this to happen. And people don't care. I tell them to listen to Bill Moyer on Friday night. He gives a really good, he has a decent program. He interviews people, and then I've ordered so many of his books. Mm-hmm. That these authors through the library to get a generalized picture of what's going on. But people, I tell them, listen to the good shows. Don't listen to the screamers. Don't listen to Fox. People just don't seem to care. And what can we do? And I just, this is, you know, since 1998, I've been talking, finally heard you again. I have Western relatives who can get you right on the radio, mm-hmm. and finally we switched providers for some of our TV and
right.
computer and telephone and all, and this one seems to provide Java, so I was able to start finding out that you were back on. And
well, Elizabeth, I have the same questions that you have, the same concerns.
But don't you hurt inside?
Yeah.
I don't know how you can stick it out.
Well, probably for the same reason that you do and a lot of people do, and that is, you know, I don't mean to get treacly here, but where there's hope, there's life. I'm not ready yet to toss in the towel, because we still haven't gone that last step that Thomas Jefferson talked about, the tree of liberty needing nurturing every once in a while.
By the
blood of tyrants and patriots. We haven't gotten to that point yet. And if we get to that point, and the second American Revolution is utterly and absolutely defeated, and we become a fascist state, then
yeah.
I'll try to find passage on the same boat out of here as you do. But,
yeah,
but until we get to that point, even though 99% of what we hear is really starting to drive a lot of us just right over the edge, until we get to that point, I think we've got to just continue to believe that we can overcome. Think of the old civil rights song, "We Shall Overcome Someday." And I there was a lot of kind of a defeatist attitude in that. A lot of white people heard that and said, "Well, what's that about? You know, we shall overcome someday."
Pete Seeger, he was written. PBS had an show about him.
Mm-hmm.
He was 17 years blacklisted.
Sure.
And he used that song.
Sure.
And it's just disgraceful what has happened. I just am at a loss. I'm just at a loss.
All right. Well, listen, here's what I suggest, Elizabeth, and I mean this totally and completely. You know, just I hear the borderline despair in your voice. I really do. I hear it in my own voice. I hear it in a lot of people's voices. And but that's not the way, obviously, that we have to go. We absolutely have to continue to refuse to believe that this experiment is going to be sunk and ended by a bunch of filthy, half-witted criminals like the Bush administration. You know, not that Barack Obama walks on water, he doesn't. Not that he is 180 degrees from Republicans, he's not. But there might be breathing room, breathing space. You know, that little inch at the top of the room that is submerged with water, but there's still that little inch of water, air up there where, you know, we can get a breath, catch our breath, and figure out how to pull this country back from the brink. And as long as I believe that, you know, I'll continue to do radio. I'll continue to use that as a way of sustaining myself. So I hope, Elizabeth, that, you know, maybe you can... you can buy into that idea too. That's right now. That's about what we've got, kiddo. Thanks, Elizabeth. I appreciate what you had to say, and I certainly understand where you're coming from. Absolutely. That's what I'm talking about. You know, I get emails that. You know, from decent people, from people. I also get emails from the real freaks out there. Like, you know, like I said, you know, people say, "Oh, you sissy ass, go on, move to Russia." You know, I don't understand that mindset. I don't. We have real, crushing, monumental problems. It's coming down on all of us. I don't care who you are. If you're not among the super mega wealthy, you're going to feel the pain. Whether you're Democrat or Republican doesn't make any difference. And it is coming. I mean, there's no way any of us, not me, not you, any of us are going to avoid this, that we're going to get out without having our ideas about what this country's about and how to pull it back completely and radically changed. It is coming. So I hear you, Elizabeth. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M. Ten before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program, answered your calls. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, podcast manager. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Sharon Gordy, and Catherine Bay, who's the executive producer. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Thanks to you for tuning in. I'll let it play for a second. Go ahead, bring it up. Bring it up. About 9 before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Jeff is calling from Seattle, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Hey, Jeff.
Yeah, how you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
Good, good. Hey, I'll just make it real quick, you know. Have you ever heard of a company called RMKBRJ?
No.
Okay. Well, RMK-DRJ was a company that was had a reputation for war profiteering, did a lot of constructions on military bases like Saigon, Tonkinut, Benoit, Long Bien, Da Nang, Da Trang, that kind of thing, and also had several covert actions going on, too.
Are you in the middle of a hog butchering or anything?
Yeah, no, those are seagulls.
Oh, seagulls. It sounds like pigs, but go ahead. All right.
No. But anyway, if you'll Google RMKBRJ, you'll see what the initials RMKBRJ stand for, and you'll find a lot of Holly Burton and Kellogg Brown and Root initials in RMKBRJ.
Uh-huh.
And the connection of war profiteering with these companies and the same people involved just seems just a mite bit suspicious to me, you know.
Well, yeah, suspicious. You don't need to be suspicious, I don't think, Jeff, because, anything even remotely connected to Halliburton, Kellogg, Brown & Root, Dick Cheney, or any member, inner circle, outer circle, satellite, whatever, of the Bush crime family is murderous, corrupt, anti-life, death-dealing, wants to see America as a society that tried for 232 years to collapse. No, it's not suspicious. It shouldn't cause you to wonder. These are criminals of the highest order. These are people who could have taught the Nazi high command a really efficient way of wiping out damn near everybody in Europe. So, but I hear you, Jeff, loud and clear. Mike is calling from Los Angeles, listening on KTLK. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
I'm all right.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe as an alternate to the federal bailout of, Fannie Mae or Freddy Krueger or Indy Mac or Countrywide or Enron
or
the Bear Stearns and the ever-growing list that's cascading, is maybe these people ought to just turn to faith-based assistance. You know, all these people, the characters involved, should go line up at the Salvation Army.
And pray.
Maybe take a second job at Jack in the Box, and if they save enough money over the next 10,000 years, they might be able to go back into business again, because we have to be consistent with our Friedman economic theory.
Yeah, we do, don't we?
And, good thing you mentioned that. I had to run in there and record the Bernanke testimony today. You know, this isn't rocket science. You don't have to be a CPA or auditor to understand white-collar criminals and the media conspiracy and collusion with what has been going on for 8 years. And, you know, and unfortunately, I just don't think that, you know, shut up and take a Barack Shield pill is going to be the prescription.
I hear you.
So, you know, I listen to you is because, you know, everybody else, predominantly in the progressive, you know, they're on that shield pill, and I think that Barack is pretty much more of the same, because we've seen this before. We had the savings and loans meltdown. The Democrats did nothing, and they were part of it. And now we have to do something to fix it, which means not go after the people responsible who went off with the $5 trillion in the Treasury between defense, between the financial services, between domestic pork bills, et cetera, et cetera. But we're going to go after those people making less than $100,000 a year. And, you know, the Republicans, it's going to hurt you just as much as it's going to hurt any of us.
Sure. Absolutely. I hear you, Mike. Good points. Thank you. I hope you call again. We're just we're flat out of time here.
Thank you.
All right. Take care, Mike. We're just about out of time, aren't we? This email.
I've just got to say something. I think Mike just had a brilliant thought, because they should turn to the faith-based communities. That's what the Bush administration wants. I think these giant mega churches, the Jerry Falwell and the Ernest Angsleys and all the...
well, you know, Falwell's dead.
Well, you know what I'm saying. His church isn't dead. But you know what? His legacy isn't dead. But get these folks and get them to prop up the mortgage business, because they're the ones that have been raping the little people. And if people get foreclosed on, they should just move into the big church.
There you go. Plenty of room in there. Oh, man, this has been an exhausting program tonight. Mike, one of my errands today before work was to take proof of my last month's income over to my local clinic and fill out paperwork so I can enroll in a sliding scale program that will give me a discount on my medical expenses. I have no insurance. Yesterday, I turned in a prescription to the local chain pharmacy store where I'm enrolled in a discount drug program and found out that my prescription will cost me $96 after the program discount. Today, I put over $50 worth of gas in my car, the same car that I was able to fill up last year for $35. Here's my question to President Chucklenuts. Can I get a bailout if I change my name to Fannie Mae? Jan, in Oregon, Wisconsin, just outside Madison. Yeah, there's more to the email here. Thanks, Jan, but that's about all I could squeeze in. We're just flat out of time. All right, take care. Try to behave yourself. I'll see you tomorrow night. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.